Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah is Yedalid. Daf is being sponsored this morning. Sponsorship for the daf is from the Diamond Ginsburg, Newman, and Berman families. Mark today's completion of Shloshim for their beloved husband, father, son, brother, brother-in-law, and uncle, Chaim Diamond. May his love of education inspire others to learn in his merit. His neshama should have a continued aliyah. Chaim ben Avram Mordechai. Today's daf is a continuation, obviously, of yesterday's daf, in which we are in the middle of a discussion of Yados. It's based on a Mishnah Anuksin, Mishnayos Anuksin. The basic idea of Yados is that when you have a fruit, obviously the fruit itself is a pri, and therefore Mekabel Tum, it's an ochel. And the stem that it's connected to is not an ochel, you don't eat the stem, and so therefore it should not be Mekabel Tum. However, the concept behind Yados is that if I have a stem which helps facilitate the transport of the fruit, if it at all aids in any way with the fruit, so therefore now the handle itself, the stem itself is considered an extension of the fruit, and consequently the stem itself is also going to be a communicator of tuma. So that means that if a davar tuma comes into contact with the actual yad itself, so it will conduct the tuma over to the pri, and the pri now will become tuma. So that's the idea behind Yados, and the Gemara's discussion centers around a comment that was made by Rav Menashe. Yesterday we had two statements. We had Rabbi Abba Bar Amar Rav Huna, and we had Rav Menashe Bar Gada Amar Rav Huna, but we're focusing on the second statement of Rav Menashe. Rav Menashe says, "Akosel eschach." So you're harvesting, and the truth of the matter is that now what you're harvesting is a collection of chaff and a little bit of fruit over here, probably grains, whatever the case is, but it's ochel. And I'm using it for schach. So now the question becomes the following. The stem of the fruit, so are they going to have the status of yad, yes or no? Presumably the answer is no. You don't want the fruit, right? You want the chaff. You want whatever the psolus is of that, whatever you're harvesting, that's what you want for the schach. In fact, just the opposite. The fruit is right now working against you. So ostensibly you don't want the stems. That would be the simple pshat. And that's exactly what Rav Menashe says. The comment he made yesterday, statement he made yesterday, "Akotzel eschach ein lo yados." So if you're doing a katsir, if you're harvesting and you wanted to for schach, so it does not have the status of yados, which means that all the way up to the fruit, it's considered a davar she'ein mekabel tuma, which for schach is exactly what you want. And meanwhile, for the fruit itself, obviously works against you. But you don't have to take the yad into consideration. The yad is not on the fruit side. The yad is on the rest of the psalah side. That was the statement that he made yesterday. And with that, we had to contend with the brisa. We're going to go back to the brisa. We'll start again at the beginning of the brisa. We did this yesterday, but it's a great starting point. So so we are on Gimel Amud Beis. We are halfway down on the Amud. And Nehma the Rav Menashe Bar Gada Tanaihi. So presumably this statement is now subject to a dispute amongst the Tanayim. Detanya, we learned in the following brayso suchi teinim behen teinim par chaylim vehem anavim kashim vehem shibalim mechavdos vehem tamarim. Okay, just numerous examples of where you are cutting the branches. It just happens to be that they're fruit connected to the branches. Kulam im psulas meruba ala oakling shervi im la psula. So according to the Tanakama, so the math over here is really simple, and that is that you just simply take into the account how much area is provided by the branches, twigs, and all the non-fruit components. You factor that against the fruit itself. If you have more psalos than you have ochel, you're good. If you have more ochel than you have psalos, you're no good. It's really simple. And according to the shita sacherim, so no, you don't. The math is a little bit more complicated. Because over here, what goes on team fruit? So what goes on team fruit is going to be the handles, the stems. Meaning the stems now have the status of yad, and therefore they are for mekabel tuma, and therefore they can't be used as chach. And so now that's how you're going to have to do the math. The stem is going to go onto the side of the fruit, as I mentioned yesterday. It's going to be a little bit challenging to me, being that not really, I just don't know how much of the stem is now going to go on the side of the fruit up until how far. Okay, maybe it depends on each fruit. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Right now, we could just simply discuss it from a conceptual standpoint. According to the Acherim, you do have to take the Yados into account because they are Mekabel Tuma. And now what comes out as follows. My love, Akamiflagi. Marsav Yeshlam Yados and Marsav Einlam Yados. So, and it, now will be a Machlokes HaTanayim. And now, the statement of Rav Menashe is an Amora. So now what he's saying is really open to a controversy. And as you know, as we know all the time, we see this all the time in the Gemara, Amoraim do not want to be confined into just one position. If they're going to make a statement, they like it to be as broad a statement as possible, seeking approval amongst the Tanaim. And now you have a Shita, albeit it's the Acherim, that goes against the Shita of Rav Menashe. So that becomes a problem. Now, Li Rabbi Abba Vada Tanaihi. So as far as Rabbi Abba is concerned, it's a Machlokes Tanaim. Now, if you recall in yesterday's daf, Rabbi Abba says that Habotz Lagas Ein Lo Yados. And we pointed out yesterday that the statement of Rabbi Abba certainly would indicate that Hakotz L'Schach Yesh Lo Yados. Good. So now, according to Rabbi Abba, fine. I hold like the Shita of the Acherim Tanakama obviously would be in dispute with that. That's fine. But Li Rabbi Menashe Bar Gadam Ilema Tanaihi. But here's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to say that according to Rav Menashe, his statement is unequivocal. If I harvest and I want it for schach, so then it does not have the status of yados. The stems do not have the status of yados. And I'll tell you that everyone's on my side. And how could that be? So I'm lechav Rav Menashe, dekuli I'm a sarvei hakotz schach in lo yados. No. Everyone's of the in agreement with me that the stems of the fruit do not have the status of a yad. And over here, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with where, when I originally cut them from the tree, I was actually planning on eating them. Ah, you're planning on eating them. So that's a classic example now, where obviously the fruit is mekabel tuma, and the stems are also going to be mekabel tuma, because they're for the achila, and the stems are going to be helpful. They will aid in you being able to handle the fruit. So that's what happened. And then, after you cut it with the kavana of fruit, now you said to yourself, you know what, I want to use it for schach. And you change your mind. So this is a classic scenario of nimlach, having changed one's mind. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Wait a second, you cut it now for originally the purpose of achila, and then you change your mind. So now let's consider what just happened over here. When you originally cut it, your original kavanah was achila, so therefore not only is the fruit mekabel tuma, but the stems are mekabel tuma. And now you go through a nimlach, you change your mind. How is changing your mind going to help? You're saying that, well, you change your mind, so now that's going to create a bittul. In other words, that'll create a change of status. The Gemara says that's not how tuma works. So mi So here we go through a Mishnah that, as you can see on the side of the Gemara, this statement occurs all the time throughout Shas. Shabbos, Kalim, Kedusha, Menachos. And that is, Kol HaKalim, this is a Mishnah in Kalim, Kol HaKalim, Yordim Leidu Tumah Memachshava, Veinolim Etumasam, Ela Bishinu Emaisa, Maisa Motzi Miyad Maisa, Umiyad Machshava, Machshava, Veinam Motzi Alo Miyad Maisa, Velo Miyad Machshava. So whenever going into a Kli, so first of all, rule number one when it comes to Kalim, the Kli at the time when it becomes a finished product now is Mekabel Tumah. It is now susceptible to Tumah. Before it's a finished product, it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah. What determines when it's a finished product or not? So, what your intention was. Meaning, if you intended it to become this, and then you decided, you know what, I want it to become something else. So, but when you decided that this is what you wanted, let's call it step A, right? Without giving specific examples. If you want to see specific examples, you can take a look at Rashi. But right now, I'll just present it conceptually. Let's say you wanted to get it to form A. And then you got it to form A. Now it's a Kli. Now it's Mekabel Tumah. And then afterwards, you're like, you know what? I'd rather it for something else. It's called form B. But you only thought that. And when I say think it, by the way, I mean articulation. All right. You thought it. You said it. At this point in time, once it's Mekabel Tumah, that's it. In other words, even though I plan on doing something else with it, and I even plan on actually working it and processing it more, just the machshava by itself does not remove the tumah status. What will remove the tumah status? Only when I actually cut it and bring it to form B. In other words, and by the way, I'm in process to go from form A to form B. Obviously, once I get to form B, now it's a kli, and now it's mekabel tumah. But only when I make that first cut in the item, changing it from form A to form B, and now it's in process to go from form A to form B, then and only then is the status of tumah going to change. So what do we see over here clearly? A machshava doesn't do anything. When I have something which is now has the status of being mekabel tumah, and now what am I going to do? I change my mind in terms of tumah and bittul tumah, that does nothing. All right. So now the Gemara says, so I don't understand. You're giving an okimta in the Braisa. The Braisa is talking about a case where I cut it le'achila. I changed my mind for schach. That doesn't do anything. So the Gemara says, v'chitem ani mila kelim dechashivei. Maybe you'll tell me the following. Yeah, I know that Mishnah and kelim. And that rule that machshava does not change the status. I know that Mishnah. But that's talking about a kli. Rashi over here describes a kli is something which is a davar chashuv. So fine. So by a kli, once it arrived at a status of being mekabel tuma, it's going to take a lot in order to change it. But over here, what are we talking about? We're talking about yados. Maybe yados is a little bit more pliable. It's a little more flexible in terms of the rules of tuma. Maybe it goes, it's mekabel tuma with machshava, maybe with machshava you can remove that status. Maybe we could be a little bit more flexible when it comes to the principle, the concept of yados. Perhaps. The Gemara says, I'm not so sure. And now what we're going to learn together is a Mishnah in Uksin, first parak here in Uksin, and this Mishnah will become a point of controversy, meaning basically what we're going to try to litigate is whether or not by yados, machshava can remove its status. That's what we're going to try to litigate. If we can say that, so then we do have a pshat within the Chachamim. If we can't say that, so then we're at a loss in terms of saying a pshat in the Chachamim. And again, by the way, this Gemara, just parenthetical note, it's a complicated Gemara. I admit it's a complicated Gemara because there are a lot of steps. And if you go all the way back to the beginning, what we're trying to do is we're trying to defend Rav Menashe. Okay, so let's litigate. When it comes to yados, can machshava change its status? So the Gemara says, let's quote a Mishnah Uksin. And the Mishnah reads, "Kol yados ha'ochlin shebasam begorin taharos." So when I have a yad ochlin, so good. So it's a Mishnah Uksin. Obviously, it's talking about yad. It's talking about a stem. And I am boses. Now, boses is a tough word to translate. And right now, we're not going to translate the word, as you'll see. A debate is over here is going to center around the actual definition of the word boses. So, but it's a verb. I'm doing something. Now, I'm going to use the word doing very lightly over here. But I have a stem, and I'm boses, begorin. So now it's tahor. All right, so here's what just happened in that Mishnah. Now, you'll notice, by the way, parenthetically, it says Rabbi Yosi Metame. Right now, we're going to leave that in parentheses. We're going to skip it. But actually, you could look at it, and we're going to come back to it. But in the meantime, however, here's what the Mishnah just taught us. I have a stem. It was mekabel tuma. It was a yad ochel. And because I did besisa, so now it's tahor. Status has changed. Now, bishlam lamandam rabasasan hiter agudan chapir. Now, what does boses mean? So, subject to a debate. Now, it's interesting. The Gemara here doesn't present us to the debate first. The Gemara expects that we know that there's a debate. Okay, classic Gemara. That's just simply how things operate. Standard operating procedure. And then, a couple lines from now, we're going to be formally introduced to the machlokas. So, if the position of boses means that you're hitter ogdan, that you untied it, so shapir, so that's very good. Right now, the Gemara is assuming, Rashi explains it, but it's clear from the Gemara that untying is not a maisa, right? Untying just simply means it was knotted, I untied it. Okay, I'm not sure what that means in terms of stems of a fruit, but whatever. If all you did is untied it, so then shapir dami, so then good. So now, at least, we could say that when it comes to kelim in general, machshav is not enough to change status. You need a maisa, but when it comes to yados, well, we just learned a Mishnah Uksin that says that when you have a yad and you were boses, and if our translation is to untie it, untying is not a maisa. That's a machshava. El laman damar, my basasan mamish. But if boses is to be understood in the typical way that it's understood, typical. So it's an unusual word. So, but let's assume that boses over here means that you crush it. So then, Michael Amemar. That means then that how do you change the status of a yad? By actually doing a physical maisa, by crushing it. So then, at that point in time, what are you left to say? Meaning, all you see over here is that when I have a yad and I do a maisa, then and only then does its status change. So the Gemara says, Hachinam shebasa mamish. So the Gemara says, okay. So over here, I'll tell you the following. That in our case over here by the schach, so you actually did a maisa. Meaning, what did you do? You changed it by actually crushing the stems. So the Gemara says, really? Interesting. So in our case of schach over here, what did you do with the stems? You crushed the stems, which is why it lost the status of being a yad. Really? And now, go back to the Braisa where this whole discussion began and review. There are two opinions. The Chachamim said that the yad is tahor. The Acherim said the yad's not tahor. We're talking about a case that we crushed it. Obviously, the ukimta has to be a consistent ukimta in the Braisa, which means that both for the Tanakama and for the Acherim, you crushed it. At this point in time, Shitas Acherim is really strange. You had a stem. Yes, it was Mekabel Tumah because when you originally cut it, you cut it for the purpose of Achila. And then what you did is you crushed the stems. And now, according to the Acherim, it's still Mekabel Tumah. So the Gemara says, yeah, you could say that. Damar ka Rabbi Yossi. So it could be that Acherim lines up with the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, the non-Rabbi Yossi Mitame. Now you can go back to that mission in Yados that we just learned together. And now we can note that the Shita of Acherim could be aligned with the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, at the end of that Mishnah, the first parak of Yados, the first parak of Uksin, so he says that Rabbi Yossi is Mitame. So hi, Mai. So the Gemara says, wait one second, let's think this through. Bishlam Hasam time of the Rabbi Yossi Chazal to the Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. The Amar of Shimon ben Lakish, however, Reuus Lahovchan be'ater. So I understand Rabbi Yossi in the context of the Mishnah of Uksin. In the Mishnah of Uksin, what just happened? I harvested for Achila, and then I did what's called Besisa. I crushed the stems. And a debate as to whether or not the stems are going to have the status of Tumah or not. Is it going to be Mekabel Tumah? Is it not going to be Mekabel Tumah? Now, according to the Tanakam, it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah, and because you did a Maisa, you crushed it. According to Rabbi Yossi, it is going to be Mekabel Tumah. Ah, you crushed it? Yeah, but still going to be very helpful. The Gemara describes that you could be Mehapech Be'ater. In other words, it's on the threshing floor, and the stems, even though they're crushed, but they're still connected to the kernels, it's going to be very helpful in turning it over. Right, you still want to be able to turn it over when it's connected to the chaff. So you can take your fork down and you can turn it over. If all you have are just the kernels, it's going to be really hard to take any kind of tool other than a shovel in order to turn it over. Okay, so it still has some utility. But Ela Hachalamai Chazia. But over here, think about our context. Our context over here is that you're harvesting it and you change your mind because you want to use it for schach. What utility do the stems have when it comes to the schach? So the Gemara says, no, it has utility. So the Gemara says the utility over here is that, look, sukkah is a week. That's it. And then what do you have to do? So you pull down the schach. If you have the stems, even in a crushed state, so they're going to be helpful because you can pull down the schach using the stems. So they still have some utility to you, and therefore it's not going to, the status of tumah is not going to leave. It's not going to depart. Okay, let's see now if we could just quickly, in short order, summarize what just happened in the Gemara over here, because admittedly, there are a lot of moving parts to our Gemara. Rav Menashe made a statement that starts the whole discussion, that akotzer l'schach, that if you harvest for schach, so the stem of the fruit will not be mekabel tumah, it will not have the status of a yad. That was the statement of Rav Menashe. The Gemara then introduced us to a Braisa. The Braisa deals with this very case of a kotzer l'schach and brings down a machlokes between the Tanakam and the Acherim. Rav Menashe lines up like the Tanakama, not like the Shita of the Acherim. Okay, so we could just simply say that the statement of Rav Menashe is actually subject to a machlokes between the Tanaim and the Acherim. And quite frankly, not the most uncomfortable position to be in, because he aligns with the Tanakama, not like the Acherim. What the Gemara just did for the last, we're now going to call 18 minutes, is the Gemara just tried to suggest that maybe Rav Menashe can even go within the Shita of the Acherim. Okay, it's a little bit difficult, but we could suggest such a pshat. How does that pshat work? It works in the following. The Braisa that we quoted is talking about a specific scenario. It's not talking about where you initially cut for schach, because if you did, so then everyone agrees that the yad is not going to have the status of a yad. But what happened is that you initially cut it as a ochel. And then what happens is you were nimlach, you changed your mind. So you cut it originally as an ochel, which means that the yad has the status of being mekabel tumah. Then you change your mind, you were nimlach. You then want to move it and use it as chach. So now, can the yad change its status? Well, that's where the discussion now gets complex. Can a yad change its status with machshava? Well, we know that when it comes to kalim, it's simply impossible that a kli cannot change its status with a machshava. You need a maisa. The Gemara suggests maybe yados are different. Maybe yad can change its status based on a machshava. Whether or not that's correct is all going to be litigated based on a Mishnah in Uksin. The Mishnah in Uksin says that when you have a yad and you're boses, so now it's going to lose its status of being mekabel tumah. So that Mishnah could serve as a source to this idea. Now, whether or not that's true or not is really going to be a dependent function of how do you translate the word boses. If boses just means to untie it, untying it is nothing. we're going to put that under the category of machshava. If bosis means to crush it, so now we no longer have a basis. The Mishnah now tells us that yadus are no different than a kli. How do I change the status of a kli? Maisa. How do I change the status of a yad? Maisa. Okay. So and that's basically now, hopefully, in a somewhat more structured, organized fashion, basically the Gemara outline. Okay, Gufa, the Gemara says, all right, let's go back to that Mishnah. Generally speaking, when we have the word Gufa, so what it does is it takes us back to a previous discussion. Over here, Gufa, as an introduction to a Mishnah, that's an unusual way that the Gemara presents itself. It's so unusual that Rashi himself notes. You could see the Rashi, so towards the bottom, Sha'alti is Mori. Wide lines of Rashi, four lines down. So Rashi writes, I asked my Rebbeim, mi gufa, that this word gufa over here in our Gemara, the Mishnah, the Maisi Agav Gravra Bishmaitan, Misha Echlam Misne Gufa. You know, the word gufa over here just simply seems to be misplaced. Kide Garsinan be Memers Amorayim. Generally speaking, when an Amor says something, we'll say gufa. But over here, gufa to go back to a Mishnah? Okay, again, if you know the back and forth of Gemara, you know the general flavor of a Gemara, gufa just simply is misplaced over here. Doesn't really fit. V'amali Rebbe, and he quotes one of his Rebbeim. Okay, Rashi had a number, but Mishum Dahach Mishnah, Min Hataros, She'ein Mehem Shum Gemara Ba'olam. But the answer is great. The answer is, look, we just quote a Mishnah Taharos. So, you know, the Bavli gets very excited, right? The Bavli knew that it didn't write Gemara on Seder Taharos, with notable exception to Masechta Nida, but it didn't write Gemara on Masechta Taharos. So over here, just, you know, it came up as part of the discussion. We got to quote a Mishnah in Uksin. So over here, Rashi writes, Gemara got excited. And Velo Mifereshes Kishar Mishnah is Lefichach, Noegashas Lomar Gufa Kedei Lafarish. So over here, Gufa is just basically like a tip off, like, hey, we'd like to clarify a Mishnah in Taharos. Okay, good. So Gufa, Kol Yadus Alklin Shabbos Namagor in Taharos. We're back to the Gemara. Rav Yossi Matame. So good. So we just quoted the Mishnah in Uksin again. And my Bissasa. Now, what does Boses mean? So again, in the context of the Gemara's discussion that we just had, we know it's a Machlokas. But now here comes the formal presentation of the Machlokas. So what does the word Boses mean? Rav Yochanan Amar Bosesan Mam. She means to crush her stems. And Rebbe El Azar Omer Hitir Agdan. No, it just simply means you untied it. So Bishlam Al Rebbe El Azar Amar Bosesan Hitir Agdan Hainu Demetami Rav Yossi. So I understand now that according to Rabbi Lazar, all you did was you were matir. You untied it. So now untying it, is that a maisa? Oh, it's all good. So the Mishnah brings down a debate, and I understand either side of the debate. Well, untying is something. Okay, so the Tanakhama says, therefore, it's eino mekabel tuma. Yeah, but and Rabbi Yossi will tell you, yeah, it's something, but it's not. You're not doing a physical change in the item. You're just untying it. It's not enough. Okay, good. So I understand how there could be a debate if the definition of boses means to untie. But Ella the Rabbi Yochanan Dam Rabbi Basa Mamashamay Matami Rabbi Yossi. But if boses means to crush it, you're crushing the stems. What better meiser, what bigger meiser is there than to crush the stems? So if that's true, so how could there be another side to this? Meaning the Tanakhama says that you crush the stems and it's no longer Mekabel Tuma. I get it. But according to Rabbi Yossi, he says that it's still Tame. What is the pshat? Now it happens to be we already know this. But again, this is formal presentation. So Amar Rabbi Shimon Malakish, Hol Verayis LaHavchen BeAter. Well, you can now with the stem still connected, albeit in a crushed state. But because the stems are still connected, you can turn it over using a fork. Okay, so they're still helpful. They still facilitate, and therefore they're still going to be Mekabel Tuma. Ad Kan. That brings us to the end of the entire discussion with but just two lines of Agadata. So three lines of Agadata. Amar Rebbe El Azar, Lama Nimshalat Tzvilosim Shal Tzadikim Ke'ater. You know, we brought up the word Ater, turning it over with a fork. You know, when it's Tzadik Davins, so it's called Itur. Where is it called Itur? Okay, beginning of Parshas Toldos. Rivka and Yitzchak were married for 20 years. And 20? I think I'm saying it right. So they were married for 20 years, no children. And so they Davened to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's right. They teach us the correct response to when you struggle, you daven. So they daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Lashon HaTorah, Vayatar el Hashem vaye aser lo. Okay, so we know in the context of the pasuk it means davening, but it is a strange usage of the word. Meaning, what is it? What does that have to do with davening? The word ater means to turn over with a fork. So lam lecha ater zeh ma'apechas atfuah begarim mimakom lamakom. So just like what does a fork does? What does a fork do? So it takes the tefuah and in the granary and it moves it from one location to another location. So after lashon shel tzaddikim afeches da'ato shel kadosh baruch hu mimidas achzarios lemidas rachmanios, and that's what the tefillah does. It moves the kadosh baruch hu from one place to another, or really from one state to another state. Kadosh baruch hu was bemidas achzarios. Achzarios over here in this context most probably means din. I assume that's the understanding of the Gemara, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu is just simply going with the strict letter of the law, and then he moves it to Rachamim, and then he moves it to a state of Rachmanus, right? Many Midrashim speak about the shofar in its capacity on Rosh Hashanah to do basically that. It moves the Kadosh Baruch Hu from the Kisei Din to the Kisei Rachamim. Good. So this idea, this concept comes up numerous times, and that's why by Yitzhak and Rivka, so from a standpoint of Din, no children. From a standpoint of Rachamim, okay, now children. Mishnah. We're on Yudal Amud Aleph. We are halfway down the Amud, and we start the next part of today's daf, and we're going to introduce ourselves now to another gzera when it comes to schach. Last couple of days, we talked about the gzeras otzer, which means to say that's perfectly kasher schach, but it's bundled. And because it's bundled, so therefore the Chachamim banned it. They said they disqualified it, even if I took the bundle of straw and I put it on top of the schach, and I'm saying this is l'shem tzel. I want this to be used for shade, but the Chachamim said it's no good. The reason why they said it's no good, as we've been now discussing for the last couple of days, is because the concern is that when it's bundled, so people sometimes put it on with the initial thought of, I just want it here to dry, and then he changes his mind, but then it's a violation of a psul d'oraisa of tasa v'lomana asui. So therefore, anytime it's bundled, even if I'm putting it up with the right kavana, so the chachamim banned it. That's what we've been discussing now the last couple of days in here in the first parak of Sukkah. Now we're going to introduce ourselves today to another gzera, a new gzera, not new, but new for us, meaning this is the first time we're going to be hearing about it, and that's what's called a gzeras of tikra. If your schach is kosher schach, but it looks a lot like the roof of your house, once it starts looking a lot like the roof of your house, it's hard to see the difference between what's the difference if I'm there in the house or if I'm there in the sukkah. If the boards that I'm using as schach for my sukkah are the same boards that I'm using as the roof of my house. And so when the boards resemble enough like the boards of your house, the Chachamim said at that point in time, no good. And they banned such boards to be used. How wide a board are we talking about? Okay, good. That's going to be the details in which we're going to be discussing right now. But that's the basic idea of gzeras tikra. Tikra means the roof. And the gzera, obviously the ban that the Chachamim placed on having your schach resemble too much like a roof. Okay, let's go. Let's start with the Mishnah. Misachim and Nesarim, Div Rav Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Oser. So you have a Neser. So a Neser is a board. How wide is it? That's a wonderful question. Stay tuned. We don't know. But we do know the following, that Rabbi Yehuda says it's fine and Rabbi Meir says it's Oser. Okay. At this point in time, we don't have nearly enough information so that we could offer at all an explanation of the Mishnah. Let's stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain everything. And then the Mishnah makes one other comment. Then the Mishnah describes how basically your the schach on top of your sukkah is fine, except for that you put one board on. And the board happens to be four tefachim wide. That's a significant width. Just again, put it in terms that you and I can relate to. We're talking about every tefach is approximately 4 inches. So if it's four tefachim, 16 inches, a foot, a little bit more than a foot in terms of the width of the beam. Okay, so kshera. So the sukkah is still going to be kosher, but you cannot sleep under the board itself. In other words, you have to make sure that when you sleep, and by the way, sleep obviously includes all activities in the sukkah, but when you sleep, when you eat in the sukkah, so just make sure to not be under the board itself. Okay? At this point in time, we don't yet have a working pshat in the Mishnah, so we need the Gemara. Okay, and let's begin. Amar Rav. So what we're going to first do is that we're going to qualify the first statement of the Mishnah, and that is that Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Meir are arguing in the Mishnah whether or not you can use boards, you can use nesarim in order to make schach for your sukkah. So Amar Rav Machlokes ben Nesarim Sheish Bam Arba'a. So according to Rav, the debate in the Mishnah is talking about a neser that is four tfachim wide. The Rabbi Meir is like Gzeres Tikra, the Rabbi Yehuda is like Gzeres Tikra. Rabbi Meir subscribes to the Gzera, Rabbi Yehuda does not subscribe to the Gzera. Now, at first, what it sounds like, and this may be correct, by the way, what it sounds like is that we're debating whether or not there's a Gzera at all. I know that's strange. In other words, generally speaking, we assume that everyone assumes that there's a Gzera, and it's just a question of what the parameters of the Gzera are. Over here, in the way Rav's presenting the Machlokas, well, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold by the Gzera, and Rabbi Meir does hold by the Gzera. Okay, now remember, we could be going back to a point in time where the Gzera was presented not much long earlier, and yesh v'yesh, some people held by the Gzera, some people didn't. If I may give you an example, chicken meat and milk, that's Gzera d'Rabbanan. We're not allowed to eat chicken meat and milk, even though the Torah permits it, but the Chachamim are gozer, understandably. In other words, once you get used to eating chicken meat and milk, you're going to eat red meat and milk. Okay, good. So it's Gzera d'Rabbanan. And the Mishnah tells us in Chulin that in the town of Rav Yossi Aglili, they ate of v'chalav. Why? Because in his community, they didn't hold by the Gzera. What? In other words, in some communities they did, in some communities they didn't. Yeah. Right. At the time, yes. Obviously, right, historically, it came a point in time where it was universally accepted. But okay. So it sounds strange, but it's not so strange that Gzera, some hold by the Gzera, some don't hold by the Gzera. There could be a tkufa where that were the case. So the Gemara says that that's, in fact, according to Rav, that's how to understand our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda does not hold by the Gzera, Rabbi Meir does. Ava ben Nesarim Shein by him ar ba'a divra kol ksheira, but once the Neser is less than four tfachim wide, so now everyone's agreeing that that's perfectly fine. Meaning at that point in time, even Rabbi Meir will tell you, that's not, that does not resemble your roof enough. Meaning the limits of the Gzera is only when the beam is four tfachim or wider. Anything less than four tfachim, there's no Gzera. And divrei hakol, according to everyone, would be kasher. So according to Rav, now, the way that he frames the machlokas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold by the Gzera altogether, and Rabbi Meir does, but only limited when the beam is four tfachim wide. Anything less than that, and Rabbi Meir will capitulate and say that it's fine. Okay, that is round one. Here we go, round two. Shmuel amar b'shein b'amar b'machlokas avayish b'amar b'divrei hakol psula. So Shmuel says that when the beam is less than four tfachim, we have a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, but once the beam is four tfachim wide, according to everyone, that's a tikra. It looks too much like a tikra, and therefore a gzera is in place. And that means, according to Shmuel, both Tanaim agreed to the gzera, just a question of now how to frame the machlokas. At four tfachim, we have full agreement. Less than four tfachim, we have a dispute. So the Gemara just clarifies, what do you mean less than four tfachim? Meaning if your beam is one tefach wide, there's going to be a debate. So the Gemara says, divrei hakol psula, ein bem arba v'afilu pachos mishlosha, hakana be'almaninu. So the Gemara exactly now is going to clarify this point. At less than four tfachim, what are you talking about? Right? If you have a beam that's one tefach wide, you know what we call that? We call that tzchach. It's kanim. That's reeds. So Amar Papa Achi Kamer Yesh Ben Marba Divrei Hakol Psula Pachos Mishlosha Divrei Hakol Ksheira My Tani Kanim Ba'amaninu Ki Pligi Mishlosha Ad Arba. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what we're going to do is that we're going to further clarify, according to Shmuel, how the Machlokas works between Rami and Rabbi Yehuda. At four Tfachim, we have agreement that it is that it's banned. Less than three Tfachim, we have agreement that it's fine. Kanim Ba'ama. The debate between Rami and Rabbi Yehuda is only when the beam is between three and four. Marsava came in the last new Shir Makam Logazrinan. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, he'll tell you that, look, it's less than four. We know that in order for a Makam to be a Makam Chasher, it has to be Dalit by Dalit. It has to be four by four. So this beam that's less than four, it's not in other areas of Halacha. It's not a Makam Chasher. Here too, it's not a Makam Chasher. And Umarsava came to Nafkele Mataraslava Gazrinan. And what Rabbi Meir will tell you is that, no, if the board is more than three Tvachim wide, so now it leaves the world of Lavud. Lavud is only up to three tfachim. And so that means to say that it's significant. In other words, once it exited the realm of Lavud, so now it tells me that it's significant, it's chashuv, and therefore it looks too much like the beams of your house.
Does Lavud have to do with
Yeah, I spent a lot of time thinking about that. It's a wonderful question. So my best guess would be as follows. The idea behind Lavud is that when the gap is so when the gap is so close to one another, halacha basically says, you know what, let's fill it in. It's fine. But anything greater than three tefachim, so halacha at that point in time says, no, you can't fill that in. That's the gap. I understand that. But it's telling us now that if halacha does not allow us to fill it in, I therefore have to put something there. So in other words, if it's not a great comparison, but like let's say you have a leak in your roof. In other words, we'll fill it in and any leak. But in other words, but halacha basically says, oh, if it's within three tefachim of one another, let it go. I know you won't, right? Our wives won't accept that argument. But halacha basically says, it's closed. But once it's greater than three tefachim, now halacha demands that if I want to look at it closed, I have to put something there. Okay, I guess that's the basic idea. Right, regardless, the Tanan. Rashi says, by the way, Rashi says it much simpler than the way I just presented it. Rashi says that once it left the world of love, it tells us that it's chashav. That's the way Rashi presents it. Okay, so Tanan. Okay, so now, okay, I know today's a tricky daf, just simply because there's a lot of shittas to keep straight. But the basic idea over here now is as follows. We have a Mishnah, machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. We now just learned the Gemara, machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, how to frame the machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Good? And if we could just do one more review. So according to Rav, at four tefachim, everyone agrees that, sorry, according to Rav, let's start that again and let me say correctly. According to Rav, at four tefachim, we have a machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda would say it's fine and he doesn't hold the gzera. And Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Meir says it's not fine, meaning that's where the gzera takes effect. Less than four tefachim, according to Rav, we it's fine. Right, the schach would be fine. These boards would be fine. That's Rav. According to Shmuel, at four tefachim, we have agreement that it's not okay, meaning it is pasul midrabban because of the gzera, because the gzera is tikra. Less than three tefachim, kanim ba'alma, those are reeds, that's fine. That's what we use for schach. And anywhere between three and four, that's the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Okay. Rav Yehuda would say it's fine. Rav Meir would say it's not. It's not. It's unacceptable. Okay. With
Oh, yeah.
In other words. No. It just extends the Gzera. And he's not adding to the Gzera. He's saying that the Gzera goes all the way down to, goes down to three. Okay. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah. So now we do what the Gemara does best. And that is that we're going to now look together at Mishnayos and Braisos and see which of these two pshatim that we just offered seems to be more correct based on other sources that we have. So first what we're going to do is that we're going to turn back to our Mishnah. In other words, we're going to take now Rav's viewpoint, Shmuel's viewpoint. We just simply look back at our Mishnah and see who better fits into our Mishnah. Now let's consider. We're going now to the second statement of our Mishnah. So Nasan Allah Nasa Shurachav Arbat Fachim Ksheira Vavashali Shen Tachtav. So you have a beam, says our Mishnah, for Tfachim. So here actually the Mishnah tells us the length of this particular beam, and it's your sukkah still good. You can't sleep under the Neser. Now Bishlam Alushmol Damar Bishain by Marba Machlok Zavayish by Marba Divyakopsula Mishamachilo Yishan Tachtav. So according to Shmuel, actually the Mishnah works out really good. Because according to Shmuel, what happens at four tefachim? We have agreement between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. That beam no longer will be good as good schach. Now, we're going to have to assume, that the remaining part of the schach, is going to make up a kosher sukkah. And this four beam is not going to bisect your sukkah. Otherwise, we're going to have problems. Okay, but let's assume. Let's assume that with the balance of the sukkah, you have a kosher sukkah. It just happens to be that right now, you also have a beam of four tefachim on top as well. And the Mishnah says you can't sleep under it. So according to Shmuel, whose position is that? Everybody. Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Because remember, according to Shmuel, at four tefachim we have agreement. So that's very good. But Ella Rav Damar B'sheish B'mar Ba Machlokas Aval Ein B'mar Ba Divrei HaKol K'sheira L'Rav Yehuda Amai Lo Yishan Tachtav. But according to Rav, what happens at four tefachim? We have a Machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So when the Mishnah at the end says that if you have a beam of four tefachim wide and you can't sleep underneath it, well, if you ask Rabbi Yehuda, are you allowed to sleep underneath it? Rabbi Yehuda would say, sure. In other words, According to Rav Yehuda, what is that called? A schach. And of course you'd be allowed to sleep under it. So the end of the Mishnah now is not going like Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, let's just say that. So me, Safra's Divrat, call Hasefas on the Rebbe Meir. The Gemara says, okay, I understand, you know, it's not smooth, but we'll simply say that the end of the Mishnah, even though the end of the Mishnah doesn't qualify, but we're gonna have to qualify according to Rav. The end of the Mishnah is going like Shitas Rebbe Meir, not like Shitas Rebbe Yehuda. Okay, Tashma. Round two. Shnei Sedinim Mitzdarfin. Shnei Nisarim Ein Mitzdarfin. Okay, again, if you have a picture over here, it's really helpful, but this is not that complicated. So you have two sheets. Sheets over here, strips of sheets that are on the sukkah. Schachan. One side schachan, the other side, however you want to visualize it. But anyway, the point over here is as follows, is that the Mishnah says that the sheets are mitzdaref, meaning each sheet by itself is not going to disqualify your sukkah. Remember, with schach pasul, any material on your schach that's not kosher for schach will disqualify your sukkah, but you need a minimum amount of it. How much do you need in order to disqualify your sukkah? Four tefachim. Four tefachim of schach pasul disqualifies your sukkah. So you have a sheet, it's less than four tefachim, next to another sheet. Okay, so now what halacha will do is halacha will add them up. This one is three tefachim, that one's three tefachim, but they're next to one another. Okay, so that's called now six contiguous tefachim of schach pasul. Your sukkah is pasul. Okay, good. But when it comes to the nesarim, they are not going to be mitzdaref. Okay, so hold that thought. And Rabbi Meir Omer af nesarim kisadinim. And Rabbi Meir says, no, just like contiguous sheets together are going to be pasul, contiguous nesarim together are going to be pasul as well. And there will be mitzdaref. Now, okay, that's the brisa. Now, the Gemara says, let's plug everything in. So Bishlam Shmuel da Amar Bishain by Marba Machlokas. So according to Shmuel, who says that when it's not four tefachim, it's a machlokas. Aval Yesh by Marba Devarakol Psula. But if it's four tefachim, it's going to be pasul. So my mitzarfin larba. So according to Shmuel, now right, we get it. Meaning the pshat in the Mishnah is very good. When the Mishnah talks about tziruf and no tziruf by the boards, so you understand that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is between three and four. The boards under discussion are somewhere between three and four. And therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, each board by itself is pasul. Okay, this part's tricky, but right, I got it. This part is pasul. I'm sorry, each beam by itself is pasul, but it doesn't pasul the whole sukkah because each beam by itself is less than four tefachim. Ah, but when I have two next to each other, contiguous to one another, so now I have more than four contiguous tefachim of schach pasul, which will disqualify the whole sukkah. Okay, so and now it works out really good, according to Shmuel.
The tziruf is
not loved. No. The tziruf is taking now two schach pasuls, each one being less than four tefachim, and they're touching each other. And so now you have an aggregate of more than four tefachim of schach pasul, disqualifies your sukkah. But ella l'rav damar b'sheish b'mar b'machlokes. But according to Rav, when you have a bim of four tefachim, we have a debate between Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Aval ein b'mar b'divrei kol k'sher, but less than four, so it's going to be kosher. So hechi dami. So the Gemara says, now, what pshat would you like to suggest now in that price that we just learned? Idis b'war bar lamahu l'litzu rufe. Now, if each beam is four tefachim, I don't need tziruf. Meaning, if each beam is four tefachim, let's go over each shita according to Rav. If you were Rabbi Yehuda, what will you say about each beam being four tefachim? What you would say is, it's kasher schach. You're good. And if you were Rabbi Meir, what would you say? Well, each beam is pasul schach. Oh, okay, fine. But I don't need tziruf. Because according to, if the case under discussion is four tefachim, so not only is it pasul schach, it's also going to pasul the whole sukkah because now you have four tefachim of pasul schach. And idelesbu arba'a. And let's imagine now that the beams are less than four tefachim. So amai v'akanim ba'amaninu. Again, according to Shitas Rav, anything less than four tefachim, we call that schach, kasher schach. So there wouldn't be a debate. So la'olam dislebun behu arba'a. So the Gemara says like this. No, each beam is in fact four tefachim according to Rav in the brisa that we're discussing. And now the question becomes, why do I need beams next to one another? According to Rabbi Yehuda, the schach is schach kasher. According to Rabbi Meir, each beam by itself is puzzle and going to disqualify the sukkah, because each beam is four tzvachim. So my mitzdarfin la'arba amos min atzad. So the Gemara says like this. You're right. According to Rabbi Meir, each beam would be puzzle, but it happens to be that the case under discussion is where the beams are not in the center of the sukkah, but the beams are flush against one of the sides of the sukkah. And so now what do we have? We have the principle of Dofen Akuma. Dofen Akuma tells us that even though it's chach puzzle, but what we can view is that we can view some of the roof that is proximate to the wall as an extension of the wall. Dofen Akuma, bent wall. Now, Dofen Akuma, even though it's chach pasol, halacha allows us to view as part of the wall. How far into the center do we say dofen akuma? From the bend. How far do we say? We say four amos. Now, four amos is a lot, right? Four amos, each amos six tfachim, that's 24 tfachim. So, right, you can go with these boards of four tfachim, you can go six boards in, and you'll still be considered dofen akuma. So the Gemara says exactly. That's exactly right. So that means that we're going to say that the pshat in the braisa, when we say that these beams are mitzarif, again, we're talking about four tzvachim beams. And if they're in the center, so according to Rabbi Meir, not only is the schach pasul, but it pasul's your sukkah. Because again, four tzvachim from the center, pasul your sukkah. We're not talking about we're in the center. We're talking about we're on the side. They're flush against the wall. Now we get to say dofen akuma. But how far do we get to say dofen akuma? Six beams in do we get to say dofen akuma. Anything more than that? Now it would be mitzarif to pasul your sukkah. That's a pshat. Admittedly, it's a challenging pshat, but it's a pshat. It's a creative pshat. Lishna achrina. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to say this over again. But we're going to do so in a slightly different format, but it's going to come out to basically be the same point. Bishlam l'shmol dam rabishem b'am arba'a machlokes. So according to Shmuel, the brisa that we just learned about two contiguous boards or two contiguous sheets. So according to Shmuel, the brisa works out really good. Well, we're talking about beams that are less than three tefachim. Aval yeshmem arba divrei kol psula. So, but anything more than four and above, according to everyone, we be pasul. And my mitzarfim la arba amos min atzad, which then only makes you wonder. So then, if that's true, so the beads are four tefachim. So what do you mean mitzareif? Each beam by itself is pasul, and each beam by itself is going to disqualify the sukkah. So here in the second version of the discussion, immediately we figured out that it's flush against the side. And over here, tziruf is to get to dofen akuma. Meaning, if you add up more than six boards, so now your sukkah is disqualified because we no longer are able to look at it as dofen akuma. But ella rav bishlam, and now according to rav bishlam, the rav meir mayim mitzarfim la'arba amos min atzad. So according to Rabbi Meir, so what does tziruf mean? Tziruf means, what we just said, dofen akuma. Meaning that the boards are four tefachim. Again, according to Rav Meir, each board by itself is pasul, but it's flush against the side. And since it's flush against the side, so the tziruf is to get to dofen akuma. But ella Rabbi Yehuda damar afilu yesh b'am arba k'sheira mai ein mitzarfin kanan ba'amaninu. But according to Rav, within shitas Rav Meir, what do we know? Rav Meir doesn't hold of the gzera altogether. According to Rabbi Yehuda, within shita of Rav. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of the gzera altogether, and as a result of him not holding of the gzera, so what do you call a four tefach beam? You call it tzach. So in the braisa, what was Rabbi Yehuda's statement? There's no tziruf. What do you mean no tziruf? How about saying it a little bit clearer? In other words, it's tzach. Just call it tzach. So kanim ba'amaninu. So I did the kamar. Rabbi Meir mitzarfin. I'm a Rabbi Yehuda mitzarfin. Okay, so the Gemara says, yeah, that's what he meant. He uses a funny language of Amit Starfin. Okay, good. In the braises are constructed in a poetic fashion, so it's easier to remember. So once we have Rabbi Meir saying Mit Starfin, so we have Rabbi Yehuda saying Ein Mit Starfin. But the true intent of Rabbi Yehuda is that it's chach. It's just kasher chach. Okay. Let's finish up. Tanya Kavasi de Rav, and Tanya Kavasi de Shmuel. Braise are going like Rav, Braise are going like Shmuel. Tanya Kavasi de Rav. So let's go. We're going to learn quickly, two braises. The first one supporting Shitas Rav. So if I'm using cedar wood, but long beams of cedar wood, and they're less than four tefachim, So according to everyone, it'd be kosher. And now, yesh ben marba, but once they're four tefachim wide, Rabbi Meir posted, Rabbi Yehuda machshir, machlokes tanaim. Good. This brisa over here frames the debate exactly as Rav does, which is exactly the point. Meaning this brisa supports Rav. I'm Rabbi Yehuda maisa bishnasa sakana. So there was some sort of a decree, says Rabbi Yehuda, shevianu nesarim shayim arba'a v'sichachnu al gabe mir peses. And we had no choice. Okay, I don't know all the details over here in terms of what the decree was, and the only beams that they were able to obtain were four tefachim beams. Okay, there's a lot missing in terms of like just basic information, but let's just get to the point. It was the shasakana. All they had was four tefachim beams, and we used it. V'yashavnu tachteim when we used the sukkah. So Amarlo, they say to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham raya, ain shasakana raya. That was a shasa sakana. That was extenuating circumstances. And extenuating circumstances, so halacha is a little bit more flexible. Okay, now, that also needs a lot more explanation. What does that mean, halacha is more flexible in extenuating circumstances? You're going to hear this from time to time throughout the Gemara, that shasa sakana is different, and things get to bend. Over here, what are we bending? We're bending a gzera derabanan. Okay, so fine. Or in other words, so that probably is the beginning of how it could bend, meaning that's the beginning of the discussion. But anyway, the point is that this brisa over here clearly frames the debate like Rav does. Good, and now we're going to go in the other direction. Tanya Kavasi to Shmuel, we have a brisa framing the debate like Shmuel does. Sichacha ben Esrem Shalar Sheish Ba'amarba Divra Kol Psula. Hearing this brisa at four tefachim, agreement that it's possible, just like Shmuel taught us. So Ein Ba'amarba, and if it's less than four tefachim, Rabbi Meir Posel, Rabbi Yehuda Machshir, Umod Rabbi Meir, Shim Yesh Bein, Neser LeNeser Kamale Neser. Now, if what I have over here is gaps between the beams that are the same width as the beams themselves, sheminich pesel beinehem, and you put schach over there. Now, I know we're gonna see this a couple times in our perek. The word pesel over here means kasher schach. It's a funny way to describe kasher schach because obviously it's really similar to the word pesel. Okay, good. So just, it takes a while to get used to it. Once you're used to it, it's easier to see. So, and now you put kasher schach in between these gaps, so ukshera. So it's going to be kasher. Now, stay tuned later in this perek. We're going to explain that a lot better. Right now, Rashi over here does reference the Gemara that we're going to see later on. So, but for our purposes right now, we just want the brisa over here just to show us that we have a brisa that frames the debate of Rami and Rav Yehuda just like Shmuel did. So right now, let's leave it as it is, and later in the parak, I'm going to explain the case, the Gemara is going to explain the case of the gaps a lot better. So, let's leave it alone right now. Now, Rabbi Yehuda will agree that if you place this neser, which is four tefachim wide, it would be kosher. However, you can't sleep underneath it, and if you did, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. Okay. The whole point of bringing the brisa is just simply to show us that at four tefachim, everyone agrees it's pasul. Between three and four, I know the Bryce didn't say that, but we know that because we learned the Gemara earlier. Between three and four, a debate between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says that the Gzera's Tikra extends, and Rav Yehuda says, no, it doesn't. And less than three, it's going to be fine. Okay, but basically, again, that's according to Rav, you're right, but right now we're within Shita Shmuel. According to Shita Shmuel, so he will tell you no, it's not kasher schach. Okay. Fine. All right, one more discussion for today, and we're going to finish up. In other words, the daf ends today at a very clean point, so we're going to get there. I know we're a little bit over, but we're going to get there anyway. So, Itmar, Havchanat Zidehim. All right, the Gemara asks a question, which is really lamdish. I have my four tefach beam. Okay, Gzeras Tikra. Let's just say it simply, right? Whether we go like Rav, whether we go like Shmuel, okay, and whether we're within Shitas Rav Meir, within Shitas Rav Yehuda, how about this? Let's make this as simple as possible, right? It's four tefachim. It's no good. I can't use it as chach. Why? Because it looks too much like the roof of my house. And the chachamim made Gzera, so you can't use it. But let's take my beam now and don't put it on the wide side, okay? And now take it and move it to where it's now standing on its thin side. And the question over here is as follows. When the Chachamim were gozer on the beams, is it specifically when the beams are appearing like they would appear as the roofs of my house? Or once the Gzera is on the beams, that's it. The beams now are pasul. and it doesn't matter how I configure the beams. Those are puzzle beams. It's great. Such a lumdish question, and we see it right out of the Gemara. Hit mar hafchan al tzideim Rav Huna amra psula, and Rav Chista v'rabba bar Rav Huna amre kishera. All right, so we have a debate amongst the Amoraim whether or not the gzeras tikra of the Chachamim are now going to just simply disqualify the beams, period, or no, only disqualifying the beams when they present themselves, when they are configured in a manner in which it would look like the roof of my house. Ikla Rav Nachman L'Sura, we follow up with a story. Rav Nachman goes to the town of Sura, Ola Gabe Rav Chista V'Rava, but Rav Huna Amri Le, Havchan Al Tzidei Amahu. And they're discussing this very question of taking these four tefach beams, but putting it on its side. So Amrlu Psula, Nasu Kishpudim Shemateches. So he says they're going to be disqualified. It's like metal beams. In other words, metal beams are be'etzem puzzle. And over here, we're going to say the same thing over here. Be'etzem, they're puzzle. And it doesn't matter how you configure them. So Amrlu Rav Huna Lo, Amrlu Chu, Amri Kavasi. So Rav Huna says, didn't I tell you that you should say like me? Now they say to Rav Huna, well, you never explained to us the reason why. Meaning over here, what did we just gain with Rav Nachman? Not only did he tell us that it's possible like you did, but he also told us why it's possible. In other words, it's kishpudim shamateches. Oh, and now we hear that the reason, now it speaks to us. You never gave us the reason. In other words, you said shir, but you didn't explain. So Amr Le Umi Baisuminai time of Alo Amr Luchu? Well, you never asked me. If you would have asked me the reason, I would have told you the reason why. Okay. Miscommunication. Lema Misayele. Okay. And now the Gemara would like to end off this discussion. And that is, Enamachzekas Kede Rosh of Ruba Vishukhano. Oh, Shanifritz Abba Pirza Kadeshi Zakarbo Gedi Bevas Rosh. Oh, Shanasan Alea Nesar Shurachavar Batfachim. Afa Pishalo Hichnis Lasoch El Shoshatfachim Psula. Three cases here in the Braisa. Case number one. Sukkah is not big enough to hold the head, the majority of your body, and the table. Meaning it's just simply not big enough. Case number two. There is a pirtza. The wall does not go all the way down to the floor. In fact, the wall, a goat can walk underneath the wall. We'll learn later in this perek, or the next perek, I forget. But we'll learn later on that's three tfachim. In other words, the walls of the schach has to go down to within three tfachim of the ground. Okay? And finally, or I have a beam that's four tfachim as part of my schach. It just happens to be that only three of those tfachim are on the sukkah itself. Now, nevertheless, the Braisa says in all these cases, it's possible. Now, hechidami. Well, that's a neat trick. It's a four tefach beam, and only three of them are on the sukkah. How did that work? So my love could go and shavchan al tzideim. So it must be that I turned it on its thin side. Okay, that's some beam, by the way. Four tefachim on the wide side, three tefachim on the thin side. Okay. Anyway, isn't that the case? The Gemara says no. Lo, hachem b'maiskin and could go and ancha puma de matalasa da'ayel tassel legova afik chad labar. Davle pesel hayotim minasuka v'chol pesel hayotim minasuka nidon kusuka. So the Gemara says like this. No, the case under discussion over here is where the four tefach beam was on the wide side. So how is it that only three tefachim are on the sukkah itself? Very simple, says the Gemara. It went over the edge of the sukkah. So I had my four tefach beams, of which three of them were on the sukkah, and one was extended beyond the sukkah. Now, we have a rule that we're going to learn at the end of this parak. This I remember well. So we have a rule that we're learning at the end of this parak, which is Pesel Hayotze Menasukah Nidon Kesukah. That if you have Schach extending beyond the sukkah, that's going to have the status of the sukkah. We're going to say the same thing over here, that this Schach that extends beyond the sukkah is going to have the status of the sukkah. Now, the interesting part, which I'll just mention, and then we're going to have to conclude, is that in this particular case, it works against us. Because now what we're saying is that since it qualifies as schach, even though it goes beyond the frame of the sukkah, so now what? What does that mean? It means now I have a four tefach beam. What do we say about a four tefach beam? Puzzle. Oh, okay. So in this particular case, it works against us. In the examples that we are going to give in the end of the parak, it's actually going to work in our favor. Okay, a quick recap of today's daf. Ed, yeah. Complicated daf, admittedly. Our first discussion today was regarding yados, the stems of branches that are connected to the fruit. which I cut for schach. So is it going to have the status of being a yad, which is mekabel tuma, which means that it will not be, it can't qualify as schach for my sukkah. And therefore, when factoring whether these branches are going to serve as kasher schach, so the stems are now going to have to be factored as fruit, which are mekabel tuma. And therefore, there has to be more branches of the tree, more than not only the fruit, but even the stems themselves. Rav Menashe opened up our daf today by saying it's the stems are not mekabel tuma. Okay, and then a lengthy discussion in the Gemara as to whether the statement of Rav Menashe is agreed to by all Tanaim, whether it's subject to a machlokas Tanaim. That was the first part of today's daf. A little interlude with Agadata regarding the tefillah of tzaddikim, because we had the word me'ater come up as part of the discussion. Okay. And then the next part of the daf today was gzeiras tikra. If the schach, even though it's wood and perfectly kosher, but if it starts to look now like the roof of my house, so the chachamim said, nope, no good. Well, it's possible because what's the difference between being in here or being in, or over there? Same thing. So the schach has to not look like the beams of my house. When does it not look like the beams of my house? Okay, so here's now, these are the details. We know we have a machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. We know Rav Yehuda is a mekel and Rav Meir is a machmir. And then a machlok is a subsequent machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. How to frame the machlok is between Rabbi Meir and Rav Yehuda? According to Rav at four tfachim, agreement that, let's say correctly. According to Rav, by the way, this information we need to know today and tomorrow. Okay, so you really have to get these sheets straight. And the more times I review it, it's better for me, better for everyone. So according to Rav, at four tfachim, we have a debate between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Rav Meir says gzera, and Rav Yehuda says no gzera. Less than four tfachim, everyone agrees that's fine. According to Shmuel, at four tfachim, everyone agrees it's pasul. Between three and four, machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Less than three, everyone would say it's kanan ba'am, it's totally fine. And then for the balance of today's daf, we went through a Mishnah, a couple of brisas, to see which of these positions resonate better with given the Mishnahs and the brisas that we have. And basically, the Gemara ended on a stalemate. Okay, and also the Gemara ended off with a brisa going just like Rav, a brisa going just like Shmuel, which means that this debate between Rav and Shmuel obviously is an older debate in terms of how to frame the machlokas of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda if we have conflicting brisas on this very topic. Our last topic for today, let's say I have a four tefach beam, let's assume it's possible, and now what I do is I put on its narrow side. Is that going to be possible? Rav Huna said yes. And the Talmidim, after hearing it from Rav Nachman, they're like, oh, now we hear it. And Rav Huna was offended. I said it. You heard it from Rav Nachman. I said it. So yeah, but Rav Nachman explained it well. Okay, I can.